Hello, welcome back to The Aware Show. I am Lisa Garr. And living in a busy city, do you find yourself that you are in a constant state of stress? Or there's always opportunities that you need to be doing? It's just busyness, busyness, busyness. And there is kind of a fear of quieting the mind, of actually deep relaxation. And what my guest today calls it is ego relaxation. Miranda McPherson is my guest, and she has a wonderful book out called The Way of Grace, The Transforming Power of Ego Relaxation. And Miranda says that we can find a new way of being that extends love and depth and peace, and that's what we really do need for our world today. So welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me, Miranda.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm delighted to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. And we have a common friend, Marcy Shymoff, who recommended you. I interview. And then of course, when that happens, I see all these emails coming through with your name on it from different people. So it's wonderful the way that all connects.
Yeah, that's part of grace. Is grace manifests as synchronicity in our lives.
Tell me about that. Yes.
Yeah, well, grace is way more than just this beautiful word that inspires us, that uplifts us, that, you know, plugs us into that felt sense of gratitude. Grace is really the primordial ground of our being, of all being, that we can relax into and really feel supported by. And it's also the blessings that arrive in very mysterious but often, you know, extraordinary personal and miraculous ways in our life, you know, like bringing us together with a person that becomes our best friend, or, you know, bringing to us gifts and blessings that are so dialed into what we really need, that give us that felt sense of remembering that we're not alone in life, that there's a goodness here that cares for us, that is mysterious but ever present, and we can open to receive. The grace is also that which transforms us. It's this mystery that dances with our sincere effort with any kind of spiritual practice, and that ultimately is that which transforms us, lifting our veils and helping us to really cross over to the other shore of freedom inside of ourselves, to really experience those breakthroughs that we need. And ultimately, grace is a new way of being. It's a way to be more spiritually elegant and fluid and free and less resistant in life, so that we can meet the challenges, both those that we experience in our personal lives and also the uncertainty in our collective world situation, and to relax and trust and move wisely with those, and therefore make a meaningful and positive contribution to our world.
Well, as I see it, grace is the absence of control. It's the absence of chaos. But how do you get from chaos and control to grace? That seems like such a long trip.
Well, this is why I wrote a whole book about it, Lisa, mm-hmm. because I'm very aware that everybody I know, myself included, has struggled with fear, control, judgment. These are the things that I call the dense features of our egocentricity. You know, all ego structures have them. We contract and we feel separate, and therefore we feel scared, and then our mind jumps in and gets really busy trying to figure it out, only it can't, and then that ramps up and on we go. And if the fear isn't resolved, it grips further into strategy or control. And we all have so many layers of this, and so we can't bypass them. We have to deal with them. So my whole exploration has been, well, what really works to help us relax out of fear, let it be resolved, let go of control in a way that allows us to feel support. And so much of it has to do with learning to stay present in our body, go towards our direct experience with compassion and kindness, learn to really meet those forces of stress, fear, control, judgment, and learn to practice what I call ego relaxation, which is being here, feeling everything, doing nothing, being present and undefended with what is. It sounds easy, but it is mm-hmm. a practice, because we all know that it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to really do it. And so in this book, I'm walking readers hand by hand through all the things that they're likely to encounter about how that happens. And I'm being very personal and real with my readers about how that was for me and how it was, you know, when I was at these really pivotal moments of my personal life and spiritual life where everything was changing, and how to really relax in the midst of that and find peace by really opening ourselves to what's always here, what has never changed, what has never rocked, what the stable ground within us actually is. And I'm really dedicated to sharing with people how they too can experience that in a real way that addresses fear and control at the root and helps us to really come home to our deepest heart.
Well, I love in your book it says grace is not a thing. And it's not something that we go after or we achieve. And in your life, was it not always this way? How did you discover grace in your life?
Well, through struggling and bumping up against a lot of really tough
things. Don't we all?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's really important that we spiritual teachers be very human and real about those moments where you feel terrified and you don't know what to do. And what does spiritual practice look like right there, you know? So, I mean, I've had a pretty extreme kind of life, you know, in varying different ways. You know, my first spiritual awakening happened when I was 13 years old with clinical depression, in which I was sort of hospitalized, you know. I didn't want to live. And so the opening into the state of grace that is boundless love found me in the midst of crisis. And it initiated me into a life of spiritual study and practice. And so I noticed that there are these places, you know, call it karma or just the mystery of life, where it seems to be my curriculum to go through these pretty extreme situations and learn how to swim while in the deep end. And every time that happens, I learn something really powerful about the importance of surrender, what allows us to surrender, how we can let that happen, how we can learn to trust really, and I don't just mean conceptually by reassuring ourselves or affirming good things, but I mean really opening through and beyond the fears to actually recognize what's holding us, what's always holding us, the love that's always available and present that gives us the strength and the courage to face what we need to face right to the very core of the matter and keep opening.
Can I ask you a question about that experience when you were 13, when you found yourself in the grips of deep depression? What was it that pulled you out of that?
Well, I really was at a point in my darkest moment where I just wanted to die. I felt so disconnected. I couldn't feel any meaning. I was in a really despairing place, and it was pretty unreachable. And I was praying, and I didn't come from a religious family. I was praying a pretty unenlightened prayer. It's like, okay, dear God, I'm ready to die. Take me away. And I was in such deep resistance to life. And depression can take you into places like that.
Can really spiral you.
And I think I kind of exhausted myself in that resistance to life. And so I think it was surrender by exhaustion. And so in that kind of surrender, because really surrender is the heart of it, you know, what really opens us to grace. And I think I somehow, it just happened, and it felt as if just this light and luminosity and loving presence just exploded from within me, and I got it. Oh, this is the depth of me and of everyone. This is the truth underlying all appearances, and it's always here.
So was it like an awakening? Was it that type of
experience? Yeah, it was an awakening, And it didn't mean I was enlightened afterwards, you know, because I think we can get confused having enlightened moments and confusing that with being enlightened. And I was still a 13-year-old with a lot of tricky material I had to unpack and work through in my life. But it plugged me in to a felt sense of reality with a capital R. And what it gave me was an inner knowing that all is and would be well, and that gave me the strength to say yes to life, to, you know, come back into the situations that had contributed to my depression that weren't easy situations, you know, with my family and my peers. But I had this inner knowing that, you know, there was truth, there was a radiant goodness that was always here, that was within me. And I was then on fire to study and learn more about how that could be lived. And so that was the first of many mystical openings that I've had.
Mm.
It was the one that set me on the path. And
I think to know what grace is, you need to experience what grace isn't.
Yes.
Give you the contrast to really understand. And I think a lot of us are in that place of knowing what grace isn't. But then if we were to just sit here on the radio and talk about what grace is, there wouldn't be a connection for anyone who's experiencing what it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to talk. Well,
I think that what grace isn't is that felt sense of being disconnected from love, meaning, strength, peace, joy, clarity, and the fact of our interconnectedness. And most people, even people who might be very dedicated on their spiritual path, are not walking around really in the actual state of interconnectedness and being in and part of the love that animates this world. And my whole thing is they can be. And I'm on fire to help more people relax into the core of their being and let those essential qualities of our true nature, yours and mine and everyone's, come alive within you. And that's what grace does. It, when we learn to relax out of the fear and control and defenses and patterns and thoughts, and we open through our suffering, not try to transcend it, but in and through it so that the roots of that suffering get addressed and healed, what happens is we start really feeling the fact that we're in and part of the deepest grace imaginable, and that life itself is a blessing, and that we are part of that blessing, and that the qualities that we need to address the ordinary challenges of our personal life, and also to address the uncertainty and the difficulties that are happening in our society at this time, are within us. And they're more available than we tend to think they are.
Mm.
So I'm a really practical, down-to-earth Australian woman. I'm not Australian. We like rubber meeting road, you know. Show me how. And, you know, so in my book, in all of the 16 chapters, I am giving very specific meditation practices and these really wonderful holistic inquiry practices, very specific sequences of questions that point your attention to really open in a particular way that helps you experience what it is I'm talking about in you.
Now, we talked about ego relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we learn what it is that we're so attached to with the ego that gives us all of that sense of control? How do we identify that ego and then teach it to relax?
Well, we use the word ego in spiritual parlance a lot, but really what we're talking about is the parts of our consciousness that are contracted in a state of separation, and therefore in that state of separation, it feels like the love, the peace, the joy, the strength, the guidance, the clarity, the meaning, I don't have it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a scary, difficult, agitated experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a lot of pushing and trying to get it or become it. And all of that pushing and trying is actually what's blocking your direct experience of grace. So ego relaxation says to you, just be here right now. Your direct experience as it is the gate to grace. So what we need to learn how to do is relax the stuff that you're trying to do that is about trying to fix yourself.
Okay.
Now, this is a conundrum because our ego goes, what are you talking about? How can that possibly help me get past my problems? You know, it feels so incredulous that learning how to be present, undefended, with our direct experience, without trying to change or fix it or rearrange it, could be helpful. But paradoxically, it's usually what so confuses our ego, the thing is that just pulls the pin out of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And ego relaxation does that. Ego relaxation is what real surrender actually is. You know, it's not something that you can do. It's something that you allow, right? by bringing your awareness to the felt sense of the contraction in your body, the thoughts in your mind that are sort of stressfully saying, I've got to do it, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I've got to figure it out, but I can't, right? And the figuring and the trying, that's what needs to be relaxed. And so we bring our breath, our awareness, our attention to it, we contact it. And just like the sun's rays will kind of touch the hard block of ice, and in that touch of the light upon the ice, it melts. That which was dense starts to transform and become clear and fluid and free again. And so ego just needs to be melted. It doesn't need to be annihilated. It's not wrong or bad. Mm-hmm. It's just your contractions. In body, heart, and mind.
Absolutely. I was speaking with someone yesterday who was having a lot of anxiety about public speaking. And she was caught in that anxiety experience. And and she, you know, is an amazing practitioner, has helped so many people, but doesn't do the public speaking part of it as much. And when she finally started to just breathe and calm down and understand her truth is all that needs to come out, then she did a great job with it. So how do you get people from that place of anxiety or a panic or whatever they're in and take them to a totally different vibration, which is grace, which is grace?
Well, firstly, we have to bring that, I like that analogy of the warmth of the sun's rays contacting the hard, dense ice, right? So the warmth of the sun's rays doesn't tell the fear it's wrong. It just contacts it with this warmth, with this kindness. And so the first thing we have to do is just if there's anxiety or fear, is just bringing that kind, compassionate contact to the part that's scared and just be there, not telling it it's wrong, just be there. That first helps us to settle, right, a little bit. Then, you know, we need to often bring curiosity to what is it really that I'm scared of? Mm-hmm. You know? What is it really? One by one. And I have this exercise in the book. I have a whole chapter, second chapter actually, called There's Nothing to Fear. Right.
Oh, I love it.
So it starts by saying to the reader, tell me something you fear. Name a fear, one fear, not 10, just one. Go a little deeper now. You know, who does that fear belong to? Is that even your fear? Is that your parents' fear? Is that your culture's fear? Is that some impression from the past? Just contact, and whatever you see, contact it with kindly. And now let's drop a little deeper. What's alive in the space underneath this fearful self, you and the fear? So if you open into the space around the fear, in which the fear is actually arising, you notice that the fear tends to sort of shrink and kind of disappear into like a speck of dust. And you realize that what's alive in the space is just this spacious presence, and that you're the spacious presence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so this is an example of the kind of inquiries of how I take the reader by the hand and help them address those things that we need to address deeply with nuanced understanding.
Now, what do people have, as in your experience, from working with so many people and training incredible ministers and so forth, how do you experience that people have, what is their biggest fear that they do have?
Well, there's a few. I would say the top three.
Okay.
The top three is kind of, I might not cope, you know, like coming into the unknown, coming to the edge of what we know. You know, that usually brings up a sort of unconscious level of fear.
That's interesting. Yes, of course.
Yeah. Fear of the unknown.
Fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm.
Fear of no control. And this is an important one to address because it's so primordially human, because every single one of us actually has a lot less control than they like to think they have.
Mm-hmm.
In that, you know, just being pragmatic here, we're all going to lose loved ones. We're all at some point going to come to the end of life as we know it. And we won't necessarily have a choice in when or how that happens. But that experience can be very difficult or incredibly beautiful, depending on our capacity to relax and let it happen, to relax and open to the mystery. So another fear that everybody has, and I've not met a single person that doesn't have this one, is the fear that they're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a big secret, because this usually feels like a huge problem, a guilty secret, something that we have to fix. And speaking very personally, you know, all this body of teaching on grace and ego relaxation came alive for me many years ago when I was 36, and I was in the cave that was the home of Sri Ramana Maharshi in India. And all those years of spiritual practice, what I call BC, before that moment in the cave, were basically me, you know, spiritual seeker, spiritual practitioner, interfaith minister, spiritual director, right?
Mm.
Desperately trying to correct this felt sense that I wasn't good enough, that there was something, that I was somehow nothing in a deficient way, that felt like icky and shameful and bad, right?
Mm.
And so it was miraculous one day, after 15 years of prior spiritual practice trying to deal with this spiritually and psychologically, to just relax on the dusty old meditation cushion in this great saint's cave and to hear these words: be nothing, do nothing, get nothing, become nothing, seek for nothing, relinquish nothing, be as you are, rest in God.
Mm.
And so the very thing I thought was this problem, I'm nothing, which is how it felt, turned out to be the gate. So I learned to really just relax into the truth that my mind didn't understand of being nothing and no one. And what I discovered, that it was not some problem, it wasn't deficiency. My ego interpret it as deficiency, something to be ashamed of. But I recognize the truth is that our ego is a structure, right? That's why it feels not good enough. It's a patch-up job of layers from the past that have sort of learned to defend and adapt and find a strategy here and there, and we all had to do that. Right?
It's so interesting, because when people say just relax and receive abundance all around you and let it happen, mm-hmm. and abundance is all around you, I don't think you can go from a place of control and panic and fear to just relax and receive that abundance is all around you. This step of becoming nothing and no one and dissolving into the energies of the universe.
Yeah.
Makes it so much more possible to receive the abundance all around you. That's a huge step.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because the dissolving is really the dissolving of the ego structure.
Mm.
It's not attacking it. It's not annihilating it. It's not rejecting it. It's not even transcending it. But it is dropping in and through and letting our identification and our attachment and our misunderstanding dissolve. Just like ice will dissolve when it's contacted by the warmth of the sun. And then it transforms. And notice what happens in the high mountains with all this ice in the winter. When the sun touches it, it starts to transform and it returns to the original substance of its nature, which is water. Fluid, clear, free, life-giving. Usually becoming some magnificent waterfall that brings life to the earth and brings hydration deeper into the world. And that's what happens with us. That's what happened with me. It's like I went from being this very kind of very repressed, depressed little very, I mean, the transformation that's happened in me over the years is just so profound.
To surrender.
And
Yeah, and it's a continuing process, which is the beautiful part about it. Well,
I think that's completely beautiful. And I notice that happening in my students. They become more and more fully and freely themselves. Mm-hmm. Their talents, their gifts, they become relaxed. Who they are, that coming forth in natural, joyful, spontaneous way.
And we realize, yeah, we don't have to push things so hard, which tends to be the controlling kind of dominant way. And so I recommend everyone to go to our website, which is theawareshow.com. And you can find Miranda McPherson's information right there. And her website is her name, Miranda McPherson, and all the spelling is there. Thank you so much for joining me today. I so appreciate this time with you.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, and thank you all so much for listening. Your energy makes this show happen. Thank you for being with me in this oasis of healing. And I am Lisa Garr. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.